Hey Jeff.
What's going on?
It's not Monday.
It's not Monday and you haven't gotten a haircut yet.
Oh my God, you want to really talk about this? My hairstylist, quick story, had a baby, went on a mat leave, and after he came back, he says, I'm only working 1 day, so 2 days out of the week, so now my next haircut is literally 7 weeks out.
Sounds like you need a new stylist. Sorry, Tim.
Tim, seriously, if you're listening to this, I need a haircut. Like, seriously, I look horrible.
Yeah.
But
enough about you.
Enough about me. But with this hair, at least there's a beautiful background that, you know, compensates with it. Mm-hmm. We're somewhere different. Where are we, Jeff?
I have no clue. You took me somewhere.
I just kidnapped you? No, we are actually in the Just West Presentation Center. We have a great episode. This is the first episode we're actually interviewing someone that's not each other. Mm-hmm. So we're actually quite excited for this.
Absolutely. Right?
And then we'll obviously let, you know, Ashley really quickly talk about the project at the end of the podcast as well. So without further ado, I am very excited to introduce my friend, my ex-colleague, Ashley Casilli from McDonald Realty. Yay!
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I know. I like to call her the up-and-coming project marketing superstar.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'll take it.
Now, me and Ashley, we used to work extensively together at Mac Marketing Solutions during my pre-sale days. This is we're working in Berkotlam. And this is, just so you know, this is before Berkotlam was the Berkotlam today. Back then, when working Berkotlam, nobody even knew where Berkotlam was.
It's okay, don't date yourselves.
We were pre-Skytrain.
Pre-Skytrain,
yep.
And pre-high-rises.
Yeah.
Like, I would share a map on WhatsApp to, like, you know, the group chat of my friends, and everybody would be like, where are you?
Yeah, it was loan sharks, secondhand stores, and pizza joints.
And co-op housing.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
That was it.
Essentials.
Right. All the essentials, right? And here's a fun fact. When we were working together, a lot of people thought, just because the way that we deal with things and our personality differences, that we didn't like each other. But the funny thing is, we always laugh behind the scenes, is actually we're really good friends. We've been good friends ever since, right? So I always thought that was pretty funny. I wanted to share that. So today, once again, I'm super excited to chat with Ashley, to talk about her past, her present, and her future, right? And we do have a pretty long podcast today, so why don't we get started? I'll start with you. Go ahead.
So, Ashley, we just met a couple minutes ago before the podcast. So what I would really love to know, and I'm sure our listeners would too, is if you could maybe share with us a little bit of your background and how you got started and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. I started in the industry in 2005. It was in the Okanagan, and I was a part of a team selling resort real estate. So we were selling ski properties up at Silver Star and Big White in the winter, and in the winter or in the summer, we'd go down to the lake and sell lakefront properties or golf course properties.
I didn't know about this for your past.
Okay.
Are we talking about timeshare?
No, not timeshare. Those timeshare salespeople are like, that is the ultimate salesperson. If you can sell that, you can do anything. I don't know if I'm in that echelon, but I definitely work with some timeshare people. No, these were, you own them outright. And what was really cool, a lot of them is, let's say you had a condo on a ski hill, you could put it in a rental pool. And a company would take care of renting it for you to offset your costs, or you could just keep it and use it as your own place. But no, they were full on outright 100% ownerships.
Oh, So was there a lot of investors buying that? Like, is there some sort of...
A little bit of investment. Honestly, it was a lot of families doing secondary homes, vacation properties for themselves. We saw some of the ski hill. It was a lot of people from Australia who came and would buy, a house or a condo or a townhouse or whatever it is. And but a lot of it was mostly secondary properties.
Are you still in tune with that market?
No.
Okay, never mind. I was about to say whether or not there's still any Airbnb opportunities there to make money and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, no, that's a few years ago. So
no, it's okay. Sorry to cut you off.
No,
continue.
Okay. Yeah. So in when the recession hit in 2009, nobody bought anything, let alone secondary resort real estate.
Yeah.
So I came back to Vancouver and I got into more traditional residential project sales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, let's focus a little bit more on the real estate side of things. Okay. You've been to Toronto.
Yeah.
You're now here for both project marketing side. Could you share with us what is the biggest difference between here and Toronto? Since I know that every province in Canada kind of does things a little bit differently.
Yeah, it was a big learning curve going out there, which I was surprised after doing so many years in projects. So first of all, when you're on the sales side, we focus and deal primarily with realtors. We do not deal with the public very much.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Which is a little different
here. You know, when you're a project marketer, it's really a mixed bag. You work with both.
That it seems like it's starting to be like this now in Vancouver, especially for the bigger projects. So, is there like a tier system as well in Toronto?
Yeah, there is, and it's pretty much across the board, and it's how it's run. So there's tiered access to get in. Platinum access, those are the top performing agents.
Yeah. They're going to get in first to every project.
Yeah.
Then you go to VIP agents, and then whatever's left over after that goes to the public, if anything.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I also have heard when during my time with Concord is that realtors in Toronto, they actually take up like with their own money, like huge advertisements to promote a pre-sale project. I was told, once again, to confirm with you, one, the realtor is paying for that, and number two, the developers are totally okay with them spending money to advertise their project.
Absolutely, yeah. So us as the developer, we would make a website, they would spoof it.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah, and we're fine with it. They spend, so they...
Realtors in Toronto on pre-sale make double what we make here.
So,
okay,
but it's not
money. No, they spend a considerable amount of money on marketing. So they build websites, lead generation, call campaigns, you name it. A lot of them have teams, and they really do work to get to maintain that platinum access. Because to maintain platinum access, you have to do volume. It's a high volume position.
Okay.
So they definitely work. So
we're used to having, when we go to sell a project, we have a marketing team that we work with.
Yeah.
We didn't have that. We never had that.
Whoa.
Because these agents do their own marketing.
So it's like cost saving for the develop. Well, not really, because they're paying more commission. So it kind of balances out.
Exactly. It's maybe less management.
Yeah, instead of managing your own team.
Yeah, less horsepower that the developer has to worry about.
Less risk, less salaries, less payments.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's just like a bunch of developers with no marketing team. They're just like, well, why do I need a marketing team? Yeah. The realtors are my marketing team.
There's somebody to, you know, maintain brand integrity.
Yeah.
But it's not as big of teams that we're used to out here.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, I guess my follow-up question to that is, do you know if the developer will overlook what the realtors are saying in those advertisements? Because I know here they kind of do. They do, right? Okay. So it's not like... Free for all, just do whatever.
The thing of it is, it's not a free for all, but we empower them. Like, they are licensed professionals, and we're going to trust that they're going to stay within the parameters of what you can say and what you cannot say, and that they're going to learn the product and represent it properly. We just put blind faith in them to do that.
Got it. Okay, then I'm so curious, since there's this whole tier system, how does a newer agent, such as maybe like Jeff, get into kind of like this VIP list? Do they literally just have to start from the bottom and sacrifice some of their early purchasers?
Yeah, this...
No sacrifices
required. I love this question. This is one I got all the time in Toronto.
Yeah.
So how you earn platinum access is show up on the hard to sell sites. So let's say we have a project, we've sold it to 90% and there's 10% less. New agents show up, move those units, move the bigger units. We'll see you and we'll raise you up. We don't need, if there's a very hot building coming to market, we don't need help
from a new agent to move one bedrooms.
Of course. Okay, so that is the, on the realtor side of things in Toronto.
Yeah.
Now let's shift it a little bit. What is the biggest difference for consumers, for someone that wants to shop pre-sales in Toronto versus someone that wants to shop here? Wait, what? Okay, so please continue.
Please.
Please.
I mean,
So, of course, you know, to take a project to market, there's a lot of things involved. Right. To stage the sales center and all that stuff. Never really a good idea. Yeah. But that's one big difference from here. Like, you cannot get your deployment equipment here until you've got your DP.
Right.
Not the case there. So sometimes if things change, the project may not be viable. So those projects tend to not proceed at a higher rate than out here.
Like, what kind of rate are we talking about? Like, roughly, I mean, we're not going to pinpoint you exactly for it.
I don't know, maybe like
5-10%. Okay.
Yeah.
Because here, we both, like, we all know, like, it's rare for... Wait, so just let me take a step back.
This is just so different.
Yeah. So you can bring it out onto the market without DP. So that means that your, what we call a CAC, is not confirmed with the government yet. Is that, because I have heard in pre-sale in Toronto, there's something called the development fee at the time of closing. Is that related or? Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
Right?
Yep. A small miscellaneous. Okay. Yeah.
What a nice surprise.
So, yeah,
it's like,
what?
Surprise! How about if it comes below the 15? Okay, so this is like public information, like people would know. So it's not like developer just go, oh, 15 for you, 30 for you, 45 for you. I see. And how often is this negotiated? I'm assuming, like, for example, COVID times when the market was just going crazy. I'm assuming the developer don't want to negotiate on that. Okay. I see. Okay, yeah. So it's not really like a surprise. Like
it shouldn't.
Got it. Okay. No. That's a huge difference. I'm still in shock. I was looking at Jeff. Jeff was like,
"What?"
Right. And that's why, like, you know, when we talk about price per square foot in Vancouver and Toronto for pre-sale projects, I remember when we're working with Mac, they're like, oh, Toronto is cheaper. But then I get it. Is it actually cheaper? Okay. Now we're just curious. What else is different? Oh, I mean, it started small, but now it seems like it's just blown into this really big thing, right? Wait, so, I mean, we just did a whole episode about Taiwan and how things don't come included and stuff like that.
Very customizable.
Yeah, and
so they do provide you with the different packages that you have to pay, or they kind of just
no
thanks.
May not.
Okay, so if then really comparing that to Asia, there's a lot of homeowners in Toronto that buy pre-sales, then after completion, they spend even more money onto the renovation. But yeah, but I guess if, what I'm trying to say is, you know, with our understanding, because everything is already so pretty, I mean, how much more could you actually possibly... Yeah. Like, I could just roll in my suitcases and then, like, I can start living. But it seems like with Toronto, it's like, no, you can't do that. You waited. So I'm assuming also because Toronto, the towers are bigger. The completion is... Yeah. Oh, right. Yes,
yeah.
I never.
So they're done from December to March.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because what do you do? It takes a lot of time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. It's crazy.
You can't. Wait. You just said the towers don't.
I can only imagine the amount of trouble that people are getting into in the last, like, 6 months.
Yeah.
What are the interest rates?
I mean, I guess my question here after hearing what Ashley has to share is that, you know, locally in Vancouver, a lot of people who buy pre-sale are investors, but there is still a group that's, like, end users.
Yeah.
But based on what Ashley said with all these timings, different fees, I'm assuming Toronto pre-sales are pretty much predominantly investors. Like, I cannot imagine any end users wanting to. And I'm assuming that's one thing. The second thing that's going through my mind is that you probably don't deal with any no realtor contracts there in pre-sale, right? Because here, like, you know, percentage is very low, but we still deal with one or two of them here that they come in, they just don't believe in it or whatever, and then they just write on their own. In Toronto, I'm assuming that's... Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, like, so far from what you shared, it seems like Toronto is such a much more complicated and dynamic market than Vancouver. Like, what made you come back?
Aside from your love, of
course. Yes. Can you relocate again if you had to go back?
Still love, but different kind of
still love.
Love.
Different kind of love. Yeah, I just, what's the point? I don't want to not be connected to them, and you can't, you can't get that time back that you don't spend with them.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Okay, I can definitely understand, you know, moving back to Vancouver because of family, and fast forward the clock to present day. Now in Vancouver, there's generally a couple of ways that a developer can sell a project. They can either hire their own marketing team, they can only hire their own team, or they would find a project marketing team to assist. Mm-hmm. And considering that we have so many projects in the city, why do you think there's only a handful of major players? You know, off the top of my head, people like Renny, MLA, and Magnum.
Yeah, so why are there only kind of, maybe a handful, if that kind of...
Yeah, it's not
three,
even really...
three big players.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that comes down to... the amount of inventory here. Mm-hmm. There's not enough inventory to sustain 10, 12, 15 companies of that size. So it's relative to what's available out there.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. I guess now we're also seeing that there are some smaller project marketing, such as yourself, of course, right?
Yeah.
Like, what is the biggest difference between these big box companies in comparison to some of up and coming like such as yourself once again? I see. So it's kind of like pick and choose your package.
I see.
Okay. Now I'm not going to try to start exposing industry secrets. I mean, that's what everybody's here for, right? But on average, you know, what is just the rough percentage on commission between obviously the big box or versus such as something like yourself? Roughly, it's fine. Like,
yeah,
please.
No, it's a really easy conversation. Is if you have a big company, maybe just when you're in the door every day, they've got a big office and they're paying high rents. And they've got high overhead, they've got a lot of problems. Yeah. Hiring is out of place and they'll have to support. So, in order to keep it going, you have to elevate the price to keep their business going. But when you look at smaller companies like myself and smaller marketing companies, we typically run very lean. No overhead, no salary, so it allows us to get our pricing. So
was an all-in-one service. So I think
okay. Now, one of the things that I heard, I can't confirm, is that one of the main reasons why also there's only like a handful of these people is because when a developer wants to get financing, apparently the bank, especially during the infra stage of the developer, the bank will actually ask like who your architect is, who is your project marketing, and apparently based on the answer, it would actually impact number one, like whether or not you can get funding, and number two, like apparently it kind of plays around with the interest rate as well. Have you heard anything like that? Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well respected company, yeah. Brokerage for sure.
Okay. 100%. You have the brand recognition.
Yeah.
And now, why don't we change gears a little bit? Let's put your developer hat on.
Since you're talking about, you know, all these differences here. Yeah.
Which way do you think would be the proper way to go if you were a developer?
I love it. That's a given. That's a given. Okay, now would the size of the particular project change anything on the decision making side of things? You're still managing.
It's an SM game.
Yeah. No, makes sense.
Well, what do you think would be the biggest issue right now for consumers trying to get into a pre-sale project? Like the whole process is in today's market, you know, both as a realtor and as a project marketer.
Yeah. Mm-hhmm.
Which is a lot of money
for
something that's happening 2 years. So I think that's honestly the biggest barrier for people.
Okay.
Getting in.
Okay. Now let's assume that they have the bank of mom and dad. Deposit is not an issue. Aside from that, what would be the hardest part to buy kind of into the pre-sale? Like knowing the right agents, knowing the right access, or doing enough studies on the developer? Like,
I think if you are out there and you're looking at a home, who know retail. Pre-sale is very different than regular retail, so having someone who knows the ins and outs is the only way to navigate it. That agent is going to be able to tell you who's a reputable and trustworthy dealer. So you try to figure it out on your own. That agent will be able to do access. Let's say it's a super hard building, and it's kind of hard to get in. You'll either have access or know someone to get access into. And so without a doubt, like, this is the biggest investment you're going to make in your life.
Okay. Well, okay. One of the questions that also came up from a lot of people once they knew that we were
him,
myself included. Yeah. A lot of people is me. How do you have any tips for a consumer on how they can pick a good developer from a not so great one, especially
Absolutely.
With recent news of, you know, projects not yeah. completing and whatnot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look to someone with a proven track record, right? Those involvements, you're not going to go wrong.
Shout out.
You're not going to go wrong. Proven developments, you're not going to go wrong. Now, you don't only have to go with the big established companies. There's a lot of fabulous up-and-coming developers. What you need to look for with the up-and-comers, who do they align themselves with? Just like we're going to go with the Drake. Who do they use for their interior designer, their architect? If they're wise enough to align themselves in the best in the business, they're on the right track. It's probably going to be a really good site.
And that's a wrap, right? That's a wrap. That's what everybody wanted to hear for this episode, right? No, but like, honestly, all jokes aside, I think even with my experience, I always tell people, do the research on the developer. You'll see it, Google review, what have you. It's all online. And once it's online, it doesn't go away, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But I think Ashley nailed it. Nailed it for sure. Is like, okay, what happens if it's a smaller developer? But it's on a location that just works for me,
yeah.
right? For example, just west here, mm-hmm. right? Then obviously that's where Ashley will start doing the research on the architect, start doing the research on the project marketing company, start doing the research even on the construction company. There is a lot of different construction company out there that has great reputations that is not strictly working for one set of developers,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah.
I guess at the end of the day, it's like, how important is this to you? Like, we're not buying a t-shirt here, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Right. Of course, yeah. Prerequisite, do your research, make
yeah.
sure that, you know, everybody. And back then we were like, oh, BD, isn't that an industrial developer?
Yeah.
Like, what is BD doing here
yeah.
with all these residentials, right? Right. No. No. Good experience. Good experience,
yeah.
right? Okay. So that's forward till today and the future of Ashley. Right? I know that you've been picking projects here and there for local developers. What is the biggest difference? Why should people choose Ashley instead of all these players out there for project marketing?
Tools that I can pull out in any market, any market condition to get the job done.
Right. And that, I think this goes also kind of goes with resale as well. I know that there are clients that just refuses to work with the team because they know that they'll talk to the team leader and then everything else we funnel down to people that has nothing to do. But then you want to hire the team leader. Like, yeah. I hire you for a reason. Find them, you have to talk to the people down there. Anyway, so it's kind of the same idea. Now I know that right now, predominantly you're focusing on some just, you know, remaining inventories here and there. I always have a question is, why don't some of these developers just hire a realtor, like, you know, everyday realtor such as us to just help them finish off with the thing? Don't spill all your beans, but any examples that you can give us? Like, for example, like, don't touch price. Actually, don't touch price.
Yeah.
But help me sell these.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes, like, I think for pre-sale, sometimes some developers will be like, oh, here, I don't want to talk about price, but here is a free locker.
Totally.
Yeah, like, oh, you know, because that's kind of in, that's their MO. In a way, right? So that's kind of what I was thinking about.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I know that some developers, they might, I mean, the most extreme I think we ever heard was lease back. I know that developers don't really do that anymore, right? Or rent back or guarantee rental for several years and stuff like that are some of the big box tools that I generally hear.
Yeah.
But of course, it depends on the situation, the developer, how rich they are, and that's the thing about pre-sale. At least when I was reading pre-sale, it's very different than resale. In pre-sale, like, you really have to think outside the box. Like, okay, we can't touch price. What other things can we entice this for the purchasers or the consumers to kind of bring it over the finish line?
Or it's bridging them, right? It's figuring out who's going to live here. What do they look for in a home? Now, how do we make them know about it?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it comes down to that.
Yeah.
Because the price is fine.
Yeah.
Right? We do a lot of analytics. The pricing is usually fine.
Yeah.
Projects take a long time to sell.
Yeah.
So them sitting on the market a long time doesn't devalue the price,
right?
Which is very different in resale.
Very, very.
Okay, now this time for real, it's our listeners that wanna know, what are some of the craziest stories or most stressful situations that you've been in? Because you've been in the game for quite a while now. You must have something in your back pocket that you can share, or is that top of mind?
Yes. That could be a whole different podcast. Okay. I'll tell you some from Toronto. Okay, so my very first site out there, I did the tail end of a building.
Okay,
so it was a really great developer, and they paired with a gentleman who owned the largest strip club in Toronto.
I like where this is going. I'm ready. Yep.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So it's a super, super cool. It's the coolest building I've ever been in. Lenny Kravitz designed a floor. Very cool.
Mm.
So I would go and sell, and I'd be there, you know, Monday to whatever my days were, normal days, 12 to 6.
Yeah.
And on several occasions,
Oh, more than one.
Several occasions. I would have someone, they'd come to the show suite, and then I'd go in the elevator to take them to whatever home, and I hit the elevator door, and like a very intoxicated high person would just tumble out of the elevator.
Okay.
Yep. Maybe the party kept going.
Yep.
Right? And you know, 1, 2 in the afternoon, they would just roll out of the elevator, and the people would say, oh, is this normal? And I'd be like, no, I've never experienced this. Almost every day.
No.
Yes. No.
No.
In the same building, you would get into the elevator with people, and it would be sex workers.
Okay.
Like, there's full of sex workers getting ready to go out. Yeah. And yeah, super. Just interesting vibe. Like this, it was very interesting vibe there.
Toronto, huh?
Yeah.
Did you end up selling the building? Like sold out?
Yes.
There we go. Yeah, top salesperson.
I had some record deals in there for sure. It was just like this really interesting mix because that connector, and I guess he like got some of his friends or workers in there. Yeah. So it was just like a very, very different vibe than what I'm used to. Hmm. Very different vibe.
Top salesperson, if you can sell that, it's not anything.
I personally would buy it for the free entertainment value. Like, you do not need Netflix. You are living in this building.
I'm just going to sit at the lobby for the next 3 hours, just see all the action that happens.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Actually, the same building. So my show suite was a unit.
Yeah.
Like in the building. Yeah. And someone lived across the hall, and the guy was, he was not okay.
Yeah.
He was not okay. So I noticed sometimes if I had to go down a level or up a level, I would just take the fire stairs. Mm-hmm. It's faster, right? Mm-hmm. It's good for you. Mm-hmm. And Vaseline started showing up on the handles. And at first I was like, oh, that's weird. It might be, you know, worker. I don't know what it is. So I cleaned it off. But then I noticed, like, no, it's intentionally happening. So I was like, oh, that's really weird. Anyway, one day I'm leaving the office and I'm going to get in the elevator to leave. And I close the door and the guy comes out and he starts screaming at me. And he's like, you've got to stop slamming the doors. People live here. And I was like, are you putting Vaseline on the doors? And he's like, I am. And you guys have to stop slamming doors. And I'm like, first of all, don't yell at me. Like, I came here to go to work.
Yeah.
We're allowed to open and close doors.
Yeah.
They're solid core doors. Like, they make a clunk. But, like, don't come out here and yell at me. And he was, like, he's little. I'm very tall. He was very little. So he was, like, shouting up at me. And I was like, no, this is not acceptable. Like, go home. So I, you know, driving home, I called the developer. And I was like, hey, I had this really weird interaction. Like, this guy. Oh, yeah, sorry. He threatened me. He's like, you keep doing it, I'm going to, like, kill you. I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to whatever.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot that. Yeah.
Kind of like a big part there.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to kill you. I was like, okay. So I called the developer, and I was like, hey, I had this really weird interaction. I don't know what to do. Like, he's obviously very upset about something. I don't think it's me, but at the end of the day, like, I do have to work across from him, so what do we do? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, just don't go to work. And I was like, well, no, that's not an option. Like, I need to be there to sell it. So he's like, okay. So we got like a security guard to sit with me so that he wouldn't shoot me in the head. So that was good. And we ended up getting Strata involved because you're not allowed, when you live in a building, you're not allowed to threaten people. So they nearly like put a ban on him going into his home. And I was like, well, you guys, like, this isn't okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's got to live there. I think we need to tell him to like cut it out.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think it went pretty, like, it got escalated, and he ended up coming over and apologizing and saying, I'm having, you know, a really hard time. There's a lot of wild things that happened in this building. And he was a retired cop. And so we ended up working out, and it was all good at the end of the day. We didn't end up having a restraining order. He didn't shoot me in the head. So.
Oh, God.
Day in the life, huh?
There was that. That was just one building. And then the other good one is I was in Toronto in a B location.
Okay.
Not a bad neighborhood by any means. Anyway, we're having a realtor event. The house is packed, 150, 200 realtors in there, and the RCMP come in, and they let me know that there was a drive-by.
Wait, you just said this was a B neighborhood. I'm starting to think this is more like
C minus.
It was not Regent Park. It was a really good neighbor, or you know, an up and coming neighborhood, but not a, like, I would feel totally comfortable there. So they were asking me if I'd seen anything, if we had any footage, security footage, and I was like, hey, can we talk about this not here? Because we're trying to sell this site. And as I'm speaking with the RCMP, one of my colleagues comes around the corner and says, Ash, I need to talk to you. I was like, not right now. And he's like, no, right now. So I went around and chatted with him, and His car had been stolen out of the parking lot at the same time.
It was like GTA.
a little bit. Yeah. And I was like, okay, can we deal with that like after everything?
Yeah.
And he's like, yep. So we put that aside, and so we calm everything down. And then I don't know, about an hour later, while the event's still going on, one of the higher ups found out, he was in the back office, he found out there was a little tiny administrative error on one of the contracts, and he got very upset and started throwing chairs against the wall, like grown men do in a work environment.
Yeah, Jeff.
Sorry for breaking your chair.
So I took her back and say, please don't behave this way in a work environment.
Yeah.
It was a day.
Wait. So, a couple of questions. Number one, when the chair throwing was happening, was there people outside? Like,
absolutely, yes.
Oh, God.
We had so many people, and there was music, and there was catering, and they didn't pick up that there was chairs getting whipped in a back office against a wall.
Oh, my God.
The whole, like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like, overhanding them. Like, yes, like...
You see, like, you know, for someone not working in pre-sale, I'm just, this is a nightmare. This is a straight up nightmare.
You hear about axe throwing as, like, you know, a stress reliever, but this guy really took it to the next level.
Oh, my God.
Yes, we had a chat. We don't behave that way at work.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Oh, my God.
Welcome.
Imagine the stuff that Ashley is going to share with us, not in front of the camera. No. Okay, yeah. Now before we conclude the podcast, I know that last area I want to touch on is the fact that you were in resale and then you were in pre-sale. I'm also kind of asking for myself, honestly, now that you're on both sides and you're extremely successful on both sides, in your personal opinion, what is the biggest difference between resale and pre-sale for yourself as a realtor?
Okay, so for myself, look at resale.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you do 100 deals a year.
Yeah.
You are dealing with 100 different clients.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that.
Yes, you are dealing with 100 different personalities.
Yeah.
You are dealing with 100 different chair throwers. Just kidding.
Please no.
This is hardwood.
Yeah. But it's a lot. It's very labor intensive to do that volume of deals in resale.
Mm-hmm.
On the project side, if I do 100 deals, I deal with one person.
Mm-hmm.
I deal with the developer.
Mm-hmm.
So we can really get to know each other, figure out how each other works, and just get it done really quickly. So that is my preference in that regards.
And that's kind of your preference on why you decided to go predominantly pre-sale. Because I know that you also do a little bit of resale.
I do a little bit of resale, not to the level you guys do. I just don't have a schedule to maintain that.
Yeah.
And I'm so service focused. So if someone's asked me for help and I can, I will. But if I can't, I refer it out.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll still support them as best can. But to me, it's not about getting all the business and all the money. That is such a losing strategy.
Yeah.
It's about helping people get to where they need, and I'll do what I can. But I've also really come to learn my limits because I've tested them and I've pushed them for too many years. And so that's,
okay. Thank you so much for that. Well, I think, thank you actually so much for your time, sharing your experience with us. We have a camera right in front of you.
Okay.
Please go at it. What are you working on lately and what do you have coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now I am working on Just West.
We're right here.
Yeah, so incredible move-in ready product. It's brand new. No one's ever lived in it. We have 4 homes available, 4 opportunities.
Okay.
Really good spread. I've got 1 in Dens, 2 in Dens, or 3 in Dens.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of choices there.
Mm-hmm.
So come out and visit us. We're here Thursday through Sunday, 1 to 4. And you guys were mentioning before, you have to see it to believe it. It's truly incredible.
It's not. The attention to detail is... Really, it's outstanding. Let's put it
is. Yeah, and I haven't even taken you to the rooftop. They've got incredible rooftop decks. You can get your own ski report for the North Shore Mountains from here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's fabulous. So that's what's happening right now. And then late spring, early summer, I've got a really exciting new project coming to market. It is called Morrison Walk, and it's by Creo Developments over in the Moodyville neighborhood of North Vancouver.
Growing quickly.
This is their 3rd development in the neighborhood, and it's the final in the Morrison series. So it's very exciting. I'll show you guys a little bit offline after, but you're gonna get really excited about it. The whole goal with those is to make them attainable homes.
Yep.
we know that the prices are, it's just hard for a lot of people. So we've done what we can to definitely make it attainable. So it's going to be one to keep an eye out for. And the community there is second to none. It truly is a community, which are really disappearing in Vancouver. But Creo has really made this incredible community network in there.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. Me too. So that's it for right now. And then there's kind of more coming Q3, Q4, but have me back and I'll fill you in on that later.
All right. Yeah. All right. Second interview is required.
Absolutely. You know, that concludes our interview here with Ashley. Mm-hmm. If you're a developer and you have some homes to sell, we're going to have her contact information right here.
Yeah.
And any clients who have some North Van, want to move to North Van, you can also please feel free to get in touch.
Yes.
We really, really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today and being our very first guest on the podcast. And with that, my name's Jeff.
My name is Joe.
We're the Vancouver, or sorry, we're the Micro Vancouver Real Estate. Should know that by now.
Yes.
Please help us with our algorithm. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, share it with your best friends. And we look forward to seeing you next week.
See ya.